Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
There's an old adage that mazel is an acronym for three words. Makom, Zman, and Lasot. The first is the place, second is the timing, and the third is to do something. So we usually don't choose the place or the timing. We have to choose, though. We have to choose to respond. And how we respond, of course, is in our hands. In the previous class, I think a big emphasis was not on the choices that Boaz made, or even the choices that Ruth made, but kind of how things unfolded. So we find ourselves now where Boaz is now about to meet Ruth, or he met Ruth, but now he discovers who she is. And Ruth does not necessarily yet know who Boaz is, or that this is Boaz. She hasn't necessarily put the pieces together, but Hashem arranges it that they should meet. So the meeting has happened, it's in Boaz's field, he notices a woman who's different from all others, he responds or deals with that situation by asking, who is she, who did she belong to, assuming that she's somebody's wife, and Boaz discovers from his farmhand or manager of the field that this, in fact, is Ruth HaMoaviah, this is the son-in-law, the daughter-in-law, pardon me, of her cousin Naomi. And as we learned, that there are two different schools of thought. One is that there was a very positive response, that the manager was very impressed with Ruth. And the other was it was a very negative response. And he said, it's not for you. Don't look at this. Don't listen. Don't look at this. This is not a good thing. So today's class is about Boaz's response. How does Boaz respond? How does he respond when he finds out that this is that famous young lady you heard about whose name is Ruth? How does he respond in view of the fact that Boaz is a supremely righteous individual, that he is a leader of his people and therefore lives in a glass house, and every single one of his actions is going to be scrutinized, and he has to think not only how it affects his own personal life, but how it affects others. And at the same time, Boaz has a responsibility. Has a responsibility towards his family, has a responsibility towards Naomi. Elimelech may not have behaved nicely, but nonetheless, there is a certain amount of moral and ethical duty that Boaz now has towards the widow of his cousin, towards his own cousin, and to the widow of Mahlon and Kilion. So Kilion's widow is gone. Oprah has gone back. Orpah, but Ruth is here now. Sorry, I always mixed it up. All right, so that's the background, that's the setting for today's class. Verse 8, chapter 2, verse 8. For the first time ever, Boaz now addresses Ruth directly. Vayomar Boaz. Boaz said, El Ruth, to Ruth. He's talking to her directly. Halo shomat biti. He says, I mean, like, you could translate it as, listen well, my daughter. Or you could translate it as, you did hear my daughter. We'll talk about the both translations in a moment. Al telchi lilkeit b'sode acher. Don't go to gather the gleanings in another field. V'gam lo ta'avuri mizeh. Don't go away from here. V'cho sidbokin im na'arotai, and such, you should cleave or stick to my maidens, to the people, to the young girls who are harvesting my field for me. So there's a lot of things that have to be understood. First of all, why is the first thing that Boaz says to Ruth, Halo shamat biti? Why is he saying that? Why is he saying, hear me well, or listen up? And anyway, it doesn't sound like listen up. Halo shamat sounds like past tense, you heard, not listen what I'm going to say to you. And what does Boaz say? He doesn't say, oh, I'm Boaz, we're family, I'm going to take care of you, I know you're a widow. He says, don't go anywhere else. You keep being a pauper here. You keep collecting here. So he's like worried about her. He's taking care of her. He says, Dal tavurim is there, don't go away from here. And he's giving her advice. Kaisid bakin and naraisi, stick with the farmhands. Well, he doesn't offer her a job. He doesn't offer her a meal. He doesn't say, I'm going to take care of you. He says, keep collecting here.
Maybe because she was sort of far away and she was waiting until everybody collects, like you said last week. So she looked like she doesn't belong there, like she didn't know what to do, like it wasn't probably because being a princess, she was not.
Okay, so let's follow your approach. Let's suggest that maybe you're right, that Ruth doesn't know what to do, and everybody else seems very effective at collecting, and she's not a good collector. So Boaz says, what did he say? He says, don't collect anywhere else. Why not? Why does he care where she collects? As a protector, so take care of her already. So why'd you tell her to be a collector? If it's going to be friendly, if it's going to take care of her, then take care of her. He says, oh, you're Ruth. Ah, so nice to meet you. And you know, Naomi, and you know, we're like family. And you know what? From now on, don't bother collecting. I'll give you a job. He doesn't give her a job. He says, no, I want you to be a collector. You be a good pauper. You be a good schlepper. Just do a schlepper. Do me a favor. Be a schlepper here in my field. I mean, it's like not funny, but that's actually what he's saying. He said, be a schlepper. I want you to be a schnurr, but be a schnurr here. And stick with my girl so you can be a good schnurr. What does that mean? How do we understand this? So the first thing I think that you need to know is that at this point, Boaz knows exactly who Ruth is. Knows exactly who she is. It's not the first time he's heard about her. News travels. He heard about her. He knows that Elimelech left, and he knows what happened to Elimelech, and he knows that Naomi is widowed, and he knows that Naomi lost her children. He knows the story. The Gemara in Shabbos, Nafkuf Gimel, says, on the words, Tidbokin imna reisei, the Gemara asks, like, what is going on here? Boaz comes to the field. Boaz is this 80-year-old magnate, this nobleman, Jewish nobleman, a person of very, very high birth and high regard. He sits on the head of the Sanhedrin, person of extreme importance, and he shows up in the field, and he's having a conversation. He met a woman. He's chatting up this girl. What's he doing that for? The Gemara asked that. V'chidakash o Boaz, l'dabek im anashim. Is that Boaz's style? He's trying to pick up a girl? What is he doing here? Why does he start speaking to her like this? Amar Rabbi Lazar says, Kivan dechaza, Batishak orpa lechamaisa. He saw, didn't see. Obviously, he can't see this because he wasn't there. Nobody was there, but he heard of this. He knows of the other daughter-in-law of Orpa turning her back to Naomi, kissed her goodbye. Goodbye. Finished. Finished with my Judaism. Finished with my little journey. I'm going back home. I'm going to go back to become a Moabite princess and enjoy my special social standing. But he knows Virus Dovkaba. He knows that Ruth cleaves to Naomi. It wouldn't leave her. Omar, he said, Shari Lad Bukiba. This is appropriate that she should cleave, that she should stick. In other words, the Gemara is almost commenting on the word V'chai Sidbokin, that she should cleave, that she should attach herself. Boaz is trying to help Ruth become attached. He wants her to find a place, find her comfort zone. He wants her to attach herself. And actually, on a midrashic level, the Yalkut Shemini says that when he says, "Besade acher," don't go and collect from another field, and we will go back to Pshat in a minute, but I think it's important to have this medrash, that when he says, don't go to another field, what Boaz is saying, he's alluding to, "Lo yielecha elohim acherim." Don't abandon your Judaism. Don't abandon your loyalty to God. Don't go to a strange field is a euphemism. Don't find sustenance. Don't find spiritual nourishment elsewhere. You've come here, stay. And not only is the word acher alludes to the idea of another God, but then he says, al ta'avuri mizeh. Don't go away from here, which is almost like a redundancy. Don't go to another field and don't go away from here. Well, just don't say, don't go away from here. Why do you say, don't go to another field? So the Yalkut Shemini says that the idea of zeh, loy ta'avuri mizeh, is connected to the words which we hear in the Shira, in the special song that Moshe Rabbeinu and Miriam and the Jewish people sang when they came across the Red Sea. And the words are, Ze Keli. This is my God. This is my God. Va'anvei, and I will glorify Him. So in other words, that Naomi has brought home this girl, Ruth. And Boaz heard the story. And Boaz is very impressed. But for reasons that we discussed previously, Boaz is not in a position to reach out. It doesn't look right if Boaz suddenly reaches out and he's inviting Naomi, who comes in an unattached woman, and his wife just died. It doesn't look right. The optics aren't good. That's number one. And number two, Boaz is not certain that Ruth is righteous. He hears about her. He hears amazing things about her. So he says to her, you're traveling an amazing path. This is an amazing journey. He says, don't go away from here. He says, don't stop now. You come this far. Stay in this field. Continue in this field. In other words, in this frame of spiritual pursuit. He says, Al tavuri mizeh, don't leave, for you said Zekeli. You said this is my God. You said this is my people. You said this is my destiny. Don't go away from this. Stick to it. And finally, the last verb is sidbakin. So the Al Kachemaini says, sidbakin im na'araisa is also a euphemism. Elo hatzadikim shakruim na'arim. Sometimes the righteous are referred to as the young, the youth. Euphemistically speaking. Because the righteous always have energy. And the righteous continue to go from strength to strength. And the idea of retirement is not a righteous idea. Sometimes it's necessary, but not a righteous idea. And in righteousness, one is supposed to wax and grow. And one is supposed to experience this vivacity of youth. And so he says, stick to the tzaddikim, in other words. Don't go away. Instead, connect yourself to the righteousness and the righteous ones of Judaism, and you will progress. So what does this tell us? It tells us, number one, that Boaz is keenly aware of who Ruth is. It tells us, number two, that he's not 100% sure she is who she is. She still has to prove herself. So Boaz can't yet embrace her. He can't yet accept her into the family. He can't say, okay, this is it, our destiny is cast. He needs to first test the waters. There's the makom, there's this man. He doesn't even know why. He suddenly felt impelled. He has to go to his field. He comes to his field. He happened to notice this very, very unusual woman in the field. He asked about her. He says, oh, this is Ruth. So the first thing that he wants to ensure is that Ruth is actually who she purports to be. He encourages her. Continue on. You're doing amazing. But he needs to see if Ruth is who Ruth is, or Ruth was just waiting for Boaz to pick her up. He waited to come to the land, and then some rich relative will take care of her, and life's going to be life for Riley. Everything's going to be great. So he says, keep on this pathway, and stick with my field, and continue to grow, and Boaz is going to be watching now. But he doesn't really tell her this. He doesn't say, hi, I'm Boaz. He alludes that he knows what's going on, and he alludes to her, he sends her a message, a subliminal message, about her continuing on to do that which she has to do. All right, now, once we have this in place, now we're going to go back to the actual conversation. Let's go back to the actual words that he uses. Haloi shamat biti. So first of all, there's this idea why he calls her biti, which we'll talk about in a moment. We'll go to that. But first, let's deal with haloi shamat. So Ibn Yechia explains the pasuk like this. He says that Boaz wanted very much that Ruth should be able to benefit from his field. He wanted Ruth to have an easier time. He doesn't want it to have a hard time. And precisely because things have worked out now, and she's here, and Boaz is now keeping an eye on her, so he says, okay, so he wants to test her. He wants to see if she's sincere, but you don't have to go to other fields. You don't have to risk being in a situation where you're going to be exposed to ridicule or maybe somebody who's unfriendly. Stay here. You have to, it's testing the waters, but you can test the waters right here. And the Igeres Shmuel says that Boaz wanted, from this point on, Tia Krova Elov, she should be close by, Sheyuchala Hashgiachala, that this way he could supervise. Ulahagin Allah, he could protect her. Because, as we have seen, the farmhands reacted in possibly two different ways. One approach is that the farmhand was singing Rus's praises. If you remember, we discussed this last week. I said, wow, she's an amazing girl. She's a fantastic, phenomenal person. She's so careful. She's so modest. She's so wonderful. So Boaz says to her, you heard my daughter. In other words, you heard what they're speaking nicely about you. Why would you go somewhere else where maybe people won't speak nicely about you? Remember, Ruth is a convert. And not just a convert, a Moabite. And she's a stranger. And she doesn't know if she's going to be accepted. And she was so careful before. She went to the fields. Didn't want to get lost. She's, remember, an unattached, beautiful young lady. She's like in a dangerous position. You think all the Jews were so righteous? There was plenty of troublemakers. Plenty of no goodniks that were mixed in. So Ruth is in a precarious position. So therefore he says, Boaz cannot say to her, I'm Boaz, I'm here to take care of you. Boaz can do what is possible to protect her. He says, you heard how nicely they speak about you here. People have appreciated you for who you are. Why open yourself to risk? Why go somewhere else? Stay right over here, he says. Don't go look at the Sade Acher. Because who says they'll be nice to you there? Who says they'll praise you? Possible that you won't, it won't work out that way somewhere else. And maybe they won't appreciate or recognize your special qualities. So in order to make sure that she's properly protected, he says to her, stick with the ladies, don't be alone. So he says, Rus was alone. He says, stick with it. There was female workers, it seems, and there was male workers. He said, don't stay far behind from the female workers. And this way you won't expose yourself to the danger of the farmhands, and some of them are not appropriate people. You'll stick with them. And Boaz is intimating that he'll be able to keep an eye on her. And this way she'll be safe. Now, the Ma'am Lois brings from a Rav Acharon something very interesting. He says that even if we are to say that the farmhand spoke in a praiseworthy way, in a glowing fashion, Boaz realized that Rus herself might be very uncomfortable because Rus came in right away. The owner comes and says, who's that? Who's this lady? And as if like she's like being fingered. So Boaz says to her, Haloi Shamat, you heard that this, what I asked about you, don't think it's because I wanted to chase you away from the field. Don't think it's because I'm stingy or don't like poor people here or don't like, oh, another pauper, another schlepper. Who is this? Who brought her? Where did she come from? Don't think that. He says, no, on the contrary. On the contrary, I'm very happy to have poor people over here. It's, in fact, Boaz is telling her, according to some of the Mefarshim, that I feel that my blessing comes from the fact that my field is open. Don't think that I'm doing you a favor. You're doing me a favor, he says. Please continue to be here. When the poor are taking, when those who are needy are being able to benefit themselves and able to nourish themselves from my harvest, that in fact brings me the blessing. So he says, don't go to another field. Don't take away from me the blessing of being able to provide for you. You know, the Gemara says that Yeser Masha Balabayis Nesel La'ani, Ha'ani Nesel La'Balabayis, more than the benefactor or the wealthy person gives to the impoverished individual, or the person who's a guest, the guest or the impoverished individual is giving a bigger gift to the one who has. Why? So you have money. So what? What does it do for you? Money is only a tool. You have to use the money wisely. You have to use the money meaningfully. Use the money effectively. Here is a person who enables you to use the money, the gifts that Hashem gave you, in a beautiful way. So Boaz is conveying to her an extraordinary message. He's making her actually feel good. And the Gemara tells us, and the Rambam quotes this when he has these different levels of tzedakah, he says, the highest form of tzedakah is when you don't actually give anything away. And the lowest form of tzedakah is when you give, but you take away a person's dignity. So what's the problem with taking? Taking means a person feels robbed of their dignity. If you give somebody a loan, if you give somebody the ability to provide for themselves, they don't feel that they lost their dignity. And the worst thing possible is to give, but to give with a sour face. And therefore, the Rambam says, even if you don't have what to give, at least speak words of kindness, words of friendship, words of encouragement. At least provide somebody with a feeling that they're not a loser. Now, this is really interesting, because Elimelech, Naomi's husband, failed his test. His test was he charitable? Was he righteous? Was he giving? And even when he would give, he gave with a heavy heart. He really was a stingy person. He didn't delight in giving away. He was always counting what's left. Whereas Boaz is the polar opposite. Boaz represents this notion of generosity, extreme generosity, to the point not only that he gave, and he gave with an open hand, but he felt that his bracha came from the fact that he was giving. He was grateful to the poor person. He says, thank you for letting me help you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. And that's what he tells Rus. He says, don't go away from here. Don't worry. I didn't ask like, who you are because I was saying, another schlepper, another schnurr. What do they want from me? He says, please, don't be offended. Now again, he didn't say who he is. He didn't say, I know who you are. But he's telling her, he wants her to feel good. She shouldn't feel like she has to go somewhere else. And that's the idea of, you may have overheard. Now we're understanding. So we have one interpretation of Haloi Shamat, you heard. You heard what they said about you. They speak so nicely about you. Why would you go somewhere else? Number two, maybe you heard my question. Maybe you heard me asking. Don't be miffed by that. Don't be. On the contrary, I appreciate your being over here. And we'll see that Boaz follows it up in the next verse even more so. So don't leave from here. Now Boaz also says Haloi Shamat Biti. Now, Haloi Shamat, according to the Dan Pshara, he says like this. Boaz was very, very cognizant of the optics. It's not going to look good. Boaz is a very respectable individual, just lost his wife. He clearly wants to remarry because his children died, as we talked about. He wants to leave some kind of seed, some kind of progeny. But the optics are not good. So when you say, listen, listen means that Boaz wasn't very close. You can't come very close to somebody and say, listen. Obviously, you invaded the private space. You have to say, listen. You say, listen when somebody's at a distance. So the Dan HaPshara says that Boaz very, very respectfully kept a distance from Ruth. He didn't approach her. He didn't come close. He said, listen, but from a distance. And the idea that he said, listen, you heard, didn't you? You heard. So by saying you heard in that fashion, he showed there was a modest distance that was kept between them. And furthermore, he calls her Biti, calls her my daughter. Why does he call her my daughter? The Gemara says that the sages always used to refer to women who were of the younger, always as a daughter. Why? Because it's a certain modesty, it's a certain distance. It's like a father figure. It's not chas v'shalom, not trying to curry any kind of inappropriate relationship. It's the daughter. And furthermore, Boaz is also intimating that Ruth is a Bat Yisrael, that her conversion is acceptable, that she's not a stranger. She shouldn't feel as if she's an alien and doesn't belong. He says, Biti, being the head of the Sanhedrin, saying Biti is you're a daughter of Israel. You're accepted. So there's many subliminal messages that are being conveyed, and Ruth likely understood all of them, or some of them, or most of them. But this gives us an understanding of a dynamic between Ruth and Boaz, and the conversation, how carefully Boaz chooses his words, being sure to err on the side of caution, maintaining a certain sense of modesty and decorum, but at the same time, starting to nurture or develop and cultivate a relationship with Ruth, possibly knowing that this could lead somewhere that's more meaningful and profound. The Teres Chesed says something very interesting. He says this all shows us, it gives us a window into, and it shows us the extreme piety of Boaz. It wasn't just a question of optics, he says. It's not just a question of, I live in a glass bubble, how will people look at me? Boaz really behaved this way. He was really a modest person. He was really very, very deliberate and very careful. And every step was measured. He didn't do things haphazardly. Respectfully, from a distance, Biti. This is the approach of Boaz. Now going back to the idea that Boaz is answering or trying to make sure she doesn't think that she's unwanted, because Boaz said, what is this lady doing here? The fact that he asked the question, he feels now bad that he may have asked the question, she could have overheard that. So he says, Halo Shamat. The Divrei Shaul says, take a look inside the Megillah Sus, the Pasuk. How is the word halo spelled? How do you spell lo? Lo usually means no. How do you spell lo? Lamed Aleph. Halo is like, did you not? Halo, did you not? Here it's spelled, hey Lamed, Vav Aleph. This is called, that it's being spelled, Bimilua, Mole. Some words you could spell with a hey and without a hey. You could spell Chanukah. Huh? Ah, you don't have a Vav. Okay. I can't help your version. It's a... There is a version that it's spelled halo with a vav, mali vav. And the idea of the vav then, the idea of it spelled mali, is like this. That there are actually six different times that the Torah talks to us about leaving the gleanings for the poor. Six different times. And the Divishol spells it out. It says, le'sechala pe'as sodcha. Don't clean up the edge of your field. Leave over the edge of your field. It says, leket ketzircha, that the leket, the gleanings. And then it says about the shikha, about the forgotten sheaves, lo'itoshav lekachle. Don't go back and take it. And then it says, es tzvich tzircha le'sikzer. Don't cut up the things that grow naturally, which is talking about the shmitir. Es inzvin yivzirach le'sivzer. The crops that grow on the vine, you shouldn't remove. And in Parshas Kiseitz, it says, Kisikse tzircha besada, and kisivsrun karmecha. Together, this gives you six locations in the Torah, where the Torah speaks to us about the poor coming to the fields that are being harvested and taking what is theirs. So Boaz then was communicating to her, he spoke the hello in intimating that you belong here. Don't think you don't belong here. You do belong here. That's what you're supposed to do. So don't worry that I said, oh, who is this girl over here? What's she doing in my field? No, he says, on the contrary, I want you to be over here. As we explained earlier, Boaz intimates that the bracha, that the blessing will come, allowing poor people. That's what brings in the blessing. And he emphasizes in the word halo, that's why he used the word halo, because it can be spelled with a vav, and actually is spelled with a vav. And in doing so, he conveys to her the importance that he places upon ensuring that his field was always open and accessible to the poor. Now all this is really nice, according to the approach that the farmhand spoke glowingly and wonderfully, and they said to Boaz, this is an amazing woman, she's not an ordinary person, that's very nice. But if you remember, there is another very profound school of thought that says the farmhand frowned on this whole thing. And he said to Boaz, what are you asking these questions for? This is not for you. And he spoke about Rus in a very disparaging manner. Oh. So the Alshech comes along and he says, Vayi kishmaya Boaz es hadvarim haroi. That this whole conversation now follows exactly what we heard before. Boaz hears all these negative things. And he hears how this farmhand, this guy, this manager was putting Rus down. So therefore, Boaz now feels terrible. He feels she probably overheard what he said. Not only she loses, she has to be robbed of her dignity. She became a schnur, a schlepper. Not only she has to go and take food like a pauper when she was once a princess. Not only that, but people are saying these things about her, and so unfairly. She's being unfairly maligned. So therefore, Boaz feels a duty to make her feel better. What's called in Hebrew, l'dabir aliba, to speak to her words of emotional reassurance. And he also wanted to put out the fire of anger or frustration that he felt was in the heart of his manager. So what does he do? He says, the real shame or embarrassment for Rus is not that a common farmhand spoke badly about her. That wasn't the real shame. What's the real shame and embarrassment? That the farmhand spoke and Boaz, who is the plantation owner, heard. He heard is the problem, much more than what somebody spoke. So Boaz says to her, I want you to know, I don't believe a word he said. I don't believe a word he said. Because if he believed what he said, would he tell her, stay over here? You tell her, that's who you are? Look, find somewhere else to go, like buzz off. So the very fact that he communicates to her, he says, I want you to stay over here, is he saying to her, I did not pay 1 ounce of attention to anything that he said. And ignore what he said. It doesn't matter what he said. Who is he? Just a common farmhand. I'm looking at you in a very positive way. I know exactly who you are. I know that you are a princess. You are the daughter of royalty. I understand. I understand your situation. Furthermore, says the Alshech, when Rus heard these words, what did she do? Did she try to defend herself? What did she do? She did nothing. She was silent. It's just she accepted the scorn and derision and embarrassment. She didn't try to say anything. That's what they're going to say. And this, the Gemara says, this is the highest form of humility when a person hears their own shame or embarrassment, doesn't even defend themselves. She didn't get involved. In other words, she kept her composure. And this impressed Boaz very much. The fact that Rus did not get flustered, he turns around and he says, Haloi shamat biti. He says, you heard. I know you heard. You didn't react. You just listened. You heard these words. You didn't react. And he says, I can see kitzadeket gemurat, that you are a perfect tzaddik. You're perfectly righteous. And therefore, he says, because you're perfectly righteous, because you didn't respond to these words of disparagement spoken of you, and because you maintained your composure, and you should know, I did not listen to a word he said. Please, it would be an honor for me if you stayed in this field. Doesn't say who he knows who she is yet. Doesn't say he knows. He says, he's intimating, I could see you're of a high birth, I could see this is not what you're used to, I could see this is being a pauper, schlepping, a schlepper in a field is not your common pursuit, and yet you retain your composure. So therefore, he says, you are to me like a daughter. Is speaking in an endearing fashion, or in a modest endearing fashion. Like a daughter, he says, like a daughter of Israel. He says, please, remain over here. It's appropriate to be here. It's good for you to be over here. It will be an honor for me. And in doing so, Boaz achieves, by saying these words, by telling her, keep collecting here, he is conveyed to Rus that he does not believe a word that the farmhand said. Okay, so now we have a little bit of a new understanding of the Pasuk. I'll conclude that the Igeres Shmuel says, along the lines, Gershmuel kind of presents both sides. He says, if you follow the approach that the farmhand or the manager spoke negatively about Rus, as the Al-Sheikh explains, so Boaz says to her, he says, you see what people are saying? That's so unfair, right? Don't go anywhere else. Who knows what they're going to say somewhere else? Like, this is not a fair environment. Okay, you're not getting a fair shake. You're not getting a fair chance over here. I'm here. I know the truth. I didn't listen. You see what the farmhand says? That's why he says, don't go anywhere else. Because who works in the fields? The lawyers and doctors? The big Talmidei Chachamim? Who's working in the field cutting? It's the lowest of, it's a menial job. It wasn't a fancy profession. You didn't have to have a very high IQ or a wonderful background of learning in order to get such a job. They were not necessarily the highest quality people. So he says, look, Chelo Shamat, you heard what he said. I didn't listen to a word. I consider you biti. I look at you in an endearing fashion, but you heard what he said. Don't go somewhere else. You're only going to have more tzaros over there. He said, in order to avoid, you shouldn't have lozes v'sayim, you shouldn't have more people opening their filthy mouths and speaking about you. So he says, I'm telling you, don't go anywhere. Stay right over here. Just stick with the girls. You'll be safe. Just stay away from the guys. The guys are trouble. They're just rambunctious bunch. Stay away from them. Don't deal with them. Do exactly what you kept doing. Just stick with the girls. And in a certain way, says the Tuv Tam, he's also conveying to her, stay with me. Stay with me. Stay in the field now. Stay in this area. Stay, you know, this is, we're going in a direction. Things are going to work out. All right, so it seemed like a few minutes ago, like a ridiculous proposition, where Rus he meets his cousin and he says, "Be a schlepper, be a schnur." Now you understand what's going on over here. This is Boaz's response to everything that happened, and this is also his test for the future to see is Rus who she purports to be, and is there actually destiny waiting to unfold for Rus and for Boaz. To the Medrash that's brought down, what David HaMelech said, the terrible. Is that the consequence of listening to Lashon Hara? And how a person, if Boaz had listened to Lashon Hara, what would the destiny of the world be? What would have happened? And it's so easy to listen to gossip. It's so easy to listen to slander. Everybody's got something to say. And if you're a street urchin, if you're a lowlife, and you could speak about somebody big and famous, then you become an equal. So that's very tempting. That you could beat up on somebody big and famous. So this guy's coming. He can start up with Rus now. He could say bad words about her. And Boaz supposedly trusted this guy. He was a manager. He wasn't just a common sharecropper. He's a person who's cutting the crops. He's an actual a person of some prominence within that frame, within that system. He could have listened. Where would the world be today? So that tells you another beautiful thing about the nature of Boaz and teaches you a very important lesson about how to respond when people speak in a negative or disparaging way. Never say, oh yeah, that's probably true. People say, you do your own investigation. Don't accept Lashon Hara at face value ever. Because it doesn't benefit, on the contrary, it could be a destructive thing. Okay. Now Boaz continues. That's the first volley. It's the first thing he says. Now he continues. And he says, I'm just going to, I'll add, just like to kind of chase this down and finish it off, that the Malbim emphasizes, really based on the words of the sages and his predecessors, he emphasizes very much that Boaz pointed out the pitfalls of this job, of this environment. He says, you see that there's a lot of negative stuff out there. So be careful, please, he says. He's worried about her now. He says, be careful. Hug the girls, stick with the girls, you know, don't do it too far away from them. Stay away from the farmhands, don't listen to what they say. You're welcome over here, keep collecting, and everything will work out for the best. On a final note, it's interesting that there's two reasons why somebody would leave a field. One is that the field owners are inhospitable, and the other is that there's nothing left. Boaz said, stick with it here. He said two things. He said, don't go to another field, you're not unwanted here. And then he said, stay here, there's plenty more. There's a lot of harvest. There's plenty more. You'll find plenty of gleanings. And there's some of our commentaries tell us that not only he said you'll find gleanings, he made sure that there would be gleanings. He told the workers, make sure you're extra generous. Make sure you leave over sheaves all the time. Whenever you cut, make sure you leave a stalk or two so there'll be what to do. So Rus will have continued material to be able to gather so she could provide for herself and Naomi. Now, Boaz continues to address Rus. Verse 9. Einayich basoder asher yiktzorum. He says to her, keep your eyes on the field which they're harvesting, which they're cutting. Why keep your eyes? Because he told them, make sure you leave over lots of extra. So it says, be sharp-eyed. There's going to be all kinds of things. I'm kind of doing it, making sure you're going to be able to have what to take. So keep your eyes on the field. V'halachta achareihen, but don't go too close. Don't fraternize with them. Don't be friends with them. You stay your distance. Just keep your eyes on it. Haloitzivisi es hanorim, don't worry about them. I have instructed these young lads specifically, lebilti nigoech, the nogech, they should not molest you, bother you, attack you, should have nothing to do with you. You will be protected. I warned them not to start with you at all, not to touch you. V'halachta el hakelim, but v'tzomis, you'll be thirsty. V'halachta el hakelim, you'll go to the jugs of water that was drawn, v'shosis, and you will drink ma'asher yishavun hana'orim. You'll drink from what the young lads, the water they have brought up, but he says, don't go to them. You'll go to the water they took, and you'll take it. I should be terrified. I should go take their water. He says, don't worry. I spoke to them already. So first of all, why does it start off with saying, Einayich basoda ashiyiksun? What's the idea of keep your eye on the field? You know, sometimes you say, people say, keep your eye on the ball. Like, don't sleep. You know, be keep your eye here. So the Ma'amloaz begins his commentary on these words, Einayich basoda ashiyiksun, keep your eye on the ball. And he says, he quotes the Iger Shmuel, who says, just stay focused. Just stay focused. Keep your eye in this field. I told you to stay in this field. Just keep your eye in this field. Everything you need is going to be here in this field. You don't have to look in other fields. You don't have to go anywhere else. And Boaz was also concerned that if Rus wanders, she puts herself in danger. Remember, she's a very beautiful, attractive young woman. And she doesn't have a protector. So Boaz is worried about her. He says, stay away from them. You keep your eye. You do what you have to do. Continue in your modest ways. Don't have anything to do with them. I already warned them not to bother you. Don't start with them. And if you don't start with them, therefore, Al Telchi, he says, don't go to the Kaitzim. Don't deal with the Kaitzim. What should you do? You're thirsty? Don't ask them for any help. Telchi ala Caleb. You get thirsty, go straight to the water supply, and you take as you please. And in doing all this, things are going to work out. Remember, Boaz wants to see if Rus is the righteous person he thinks she is. He's not yet ready to throw caution to the winds. He's not yet ready to invite her in. But he is ready to keep a very close eye on her. A, he's already worried about her. He wants her to be protected. B, he wants her to succeed. So now he's giving her the instructions so that she can make this happen. That's the idea. Keep your eye on the field. Now, it gets really interesting because when we talk about eye, in Jewish tradition, we have something called an ayin hara. What is ayin hara? Evil eye or the bad eye. And there's also, by the way, the idea of ayin tov. It's also something called a good eye. So everything has an antonym. So ayin hara, it's also ayin tov. There's an expression in the book of Proverbs that it says over there, toiv ayin, hu yivirach. The good one with the good eye, that is the one who shall be blessed. In other words, toiv ayin is the opposite of what's called tsar ayin, the Mishnah says. A tsar ayin is somebody who's stingy. A tsar ayin can't stand other people's success, especially if it comes at their expense. A toiv ayin, it has a good eye, always looks at other people with a good eye, and always has a generous spirit about them, always happy to give, always happy to share. That brings them joy. So the Medrash tells us that Boaz is intimating to Rus, I understand who you're righteous. I understand who you are. And by you having a good eye, by you remaining on this field and keeping your eyes on this field, because of your righteousness and because of the special nature of who you are and your deeds, that itself will bring you blessing. That will cause my field to be blessed. So in other words, again, now Boaz is emphasizing and encouraging Rus. He says, your eyes, keep him on the field. He's intimating that this is a blessing for him. This is a good thing for him. which really dovetails into what we discussed earlier about Boaz's amazing approach. He thanked the poor people. He was grateful for the opportunity to give tzedakah. He didn't kvetch and complain, what are you doing in my field? He says, keep your eye on the field. And by keeping your eye on the field, this itself will bring me a bracha, this itself will bring me blessing in the crops. As the Geresh Shmuel says, b'chol mokim sh'nesenes eineha, Boaz felt that wherever Ruth would put her eyes, wherever she would put her gaze, shruya habracha, that blessing would ensue as a result. And that's why he asked her, einayich basada sh'yikzeirun, sh'kol mokim sh'mistakel bay yivoyrach. Now we know in Jewish tradition that a gaze, a very strong look, has an impact. Has an impact. On a very literal level, there's a story with Reb Shimon bar Yochai that after he was in the cave for 13 years, having run away from the Romans to save his life, studying Torah, nothing else, miraculously sustained by a tree that grew out of nowhere and a wellspring that appeared, and studying Torah with his son for all these years, he came out an extraordinary high level of holiness. And he couldn't believe his eyes when he came out, that people were still doing mundane, ordinary things. And it says, wherever he looked, a fire would break out. His eyes, the power of his gaze was such a penetrating power that actually caused things to burst into flames, like lasers. And it says that Shimon was burning and Ablazer was repairing after, and Hashem said, go back to your cave. You came out, I let you come out to destroy my world, go back. And he came out the second time and he bumped into a fellow, it was Erev Shabbos, rushing home with two big arava branches. And they said, what are you going on arava branches? And he said, it's Shabbos. I bring home flowers for my wife. He said, one is for Zachar, one's for Shomer. Because it's two expressions. Zachar to Shabbos. Remember Shabbos. Shomer is Shabbos. Keep the Shabbos. And he said, and he was very touched by this, how people took the Shabbos literally and they were trying to honor the Shabbos to the best of their ability. And that's how Reb Shimon gets rehabilitated, so to speak, back into ordinary or everyday life. So we have this idea of a look, this idea of a glance. And Hayom Yom is brought down that a glance has a power. That if somebody looks at somebody very strongly, that the other person eventually will turn around. There's a certain power. In the Sifra Chakira, it says that there's an energy that actually projects from the eye. And that's why people get uncomfortable when they're being stared at. There's something in a look. And it says the look of a tzaddik actually could make a difference. It's a famous idea by Chassidim, the kukfana tzaddik. Tzaddik looked at something. The very fact that holy eyes looked upon something, there's something there. It's not simple. So here, this is a biblical source for this, where Boaz says to Ruth, keep your eyes on the field. And he feels that by her keeping her eyes on the field, blessing will come to the field. Now what he's also doing is empowering her. She shouldn't feel like a schnur, she shouldn't feel like a schlepper. He's telling her, your presence brings a blessing. Your gaze brings a blessing to my field. So that's the first thing, what he says in Ayach Basada, on a literal level, stay away from trouble. Don't look. Sometimes you lock eyes with people, you connect with people. So don't look at them, ignore them. Just avoid their gaze. They may look at you, you know. Beautiful girl, they're wild boys, they might look at you. Don't return their look. Don't return their gaze. You keep your eyes in the field, you keep your eyes in the work, stay out of trouble. And the deeper message here is that he's able to bring about this concept of bracha. She's able to bring about, and Boaz asks her, please, it's an honor, and that's why I want you to do so. The Danab Shara says something very interesting. He says at this point, he gave her a job. He said, do me a favor, keep your eyes on what's going on. I trust you. Keep your eyes. Just keep an eye on what's going on here, and I'll be back. You'll report to me. So it wasn't just being a schnur. Boaz actually kind of gave her a job all of a sudden, which is the greatest form of empowerment. You actually give somebody responsibility. He said that you trust somebody. Do me a favor. Keep an eye on what's going on. And that's the idea of the Einayach. He says she was actually telling her that you'll be reporting back to me. The Pshleima Al-Kabatz follows a very similar approach as the Al-Sheikh, and he says that Boaz was telling her, follow the female harvesters, just stay away from the guys, and keep your eyes on what you have to do, but don't worry about always looking over your back. Don't worry about that. You know, I was in Brazil a few months ago, so the head shliach there, Rabbi Alpern, told me that he goes to Miami twice a year. And he said, people ask him, why do you go to Miami? And he says, so I can walk in the street without looking over my back. That's like, way of life in certain countries in South America. So that's where it goes. I like to walk in the street looking over my back. When you feel that you're in a situation of danger, what do? You're always looking all over. You're checking out. That's the right thing to do. That's a smart thing to do. So Boaz says to her, you don't have to look around anymore. Relax. I took care of things. I already warned everybody. The fear of God is upon them. The fear of Boaz is upon them. He says, you just look at your work now. You don't have to keep looking here and there to see who's out to bother you. Somebody, you could be, rest assured, take it easy. You turn down the stress level. So that's the Inayach Basada. You don't have to look around at all. Everything is going to work out just fine. Now, how does he know she's going to get thirsty? So Rashi says, it says, V'tzamis, is like matter of fact. You'll be thirsty, you'll go to the Kalim. Maybe she won't be thirsty. So Rashi says, no, it means v'intitzmi, if you'll be thirsty. And the Sif Sichavim explains that Rashi's trying to say, how do you know she's thirsty? He meant to say, if you'll be thirsty. Should you become thirsty? So why does it say then, v'tzamis lashem vaday? That was the question. So Rashi says, Boaz wanted to emphasize, do not be ashamed to go and take from the water that the workers took for themselves. Don't be ashamed. Don't alti kol mi leleches, belishtes mikli amayim asher yishoven hanarim. You go and enjoy that water and feel at home over here in this field. You're here, you're collecting, you're doing me a favor, you're even keeping an eye on things, you're going to bring blessing everywhere, and don't feel ashamed. Make yourself at home. Drink all you want. It's a hot day after all. You know, it's a hot day, it's not spring in Canada, this is spring in Israel. So it actually gets warm. You'll drink, don't worry. Now the Malbim says something phenomenal here. He bases his words on the story of David HaMelech, many, many years later, in Beis Lechem, about having different beiros of mayim. Clean water, sweet water, and then there was water that was inferior water. So the Malbim suggests that the poor people, they had an inferior well that they would take water from themselves. It was like a public water area, which you call today the equivalent of what do they call those things? The water fountains, the public water fountains. He said, you go to the spring water. You go to the dispenser. You don't have to go to the public water fountain. And he said, this was the finer water and the nicer water, which was also very close. The workers had water right there. And everybody else had to go far away to go to an inferior well to be able to get water. So he said to her, of course she's going to become thirsty. The point wasn't if she'll become thirsty. The point was, you can take from the good water supply, but don't talk to them, she said. You just go. Go straight El HaKalim. Ignore the guys. Ignore them. Don't deal with them. Don't have anything to do with them. You take the fine water and everything will work out. Something beautiful that I saw is this notion that when a shidduch was brought about the very first time, the very first Jewish shidduch. Anybody remember who was the shadchan, who made the match the first time? Eliezer. Eliezer found Rivka for Yitzchak. Where did Eliezer find? By the well. And he said, and even before he found Rivka, he said to Hashem, I'm coming to the well, and let's see if she'll take kadech, and she'll say, you drink from my kad, and then others should drink also, this will be the sign. So there's already something about a well, and about drawing water from a well. That's the first Jewish shidduch ever to happen. What's the second shidduch, the second Jewish shidduch to happen? What's the next marriage? Who's the next generation? Yaakov, where does Yaakov meet Rachel? At the well. What is she doing? Drawing water. Oh, very good. Where's the next time? Moshe Rabbeinu. Where does Moshe Rabbeinu meet Zipporah? At the well. Doing what? Drawing water. Oh, so this is really interesting. So the Maharal of Prague asks a question. He says, what's up with matches and the well? How come all Jewish matches taking place at a well? First shidduch at a well, second shidduch at a well, Moshe ben shidduch. Avram, we don't know how he met Sarah. That doesn't go into that. But Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Rachel, and the next famous Jew is Moshe. We don't know much about Yosef's shidduch. Another Pharaoh made him a shidduch over there. We don't hear. So what's up with the well? So the Maharal of Prague says an amazing thing. He says, when you dig a well, do you actually create something new? No, what do? You uncover what was always there. That's the nature of digging a well. Digging a well is to uncover a source of water that is always there, but inaccessible. He says, what does it mean, a real shidduch? A real shidduch is not when there's an artificial connection between two people. The real shidduch, the real zivug is when you're married to the person that's actually a kindred soul, a soulmate. So every soul has a masculine side and a feminine side, and the souls are divided, and the souls are supposed to be put back together. So really what a shidduch is not to create something new, what a shidduch is actually all about reclaiming something old. So he says, that's why the shidduchim happened at the well. So in light of all this, how beautiful, how fascinating is it that Boaz, the first time he meets Ruth, first is testing the waters, continue in this field, following your path, I'm making sure you're protected, just do what you have to do, still testing. But right away, what's the first thing, the first thing gets introduced over here? The well and the water, drawing the water. So this already tells us that there's something deeper that's going on over here. And the fact that Rus is not going to draw her own water because she's going to have to walk far away, like the Malbim says, but instead, this is the idea that he's going to draw from the well over here. This tells us that Boaz intimated to Rus, already assuming that she had a working knowledge of the Chumash, and she knew the stories of our people, that Naomi had trained her because she knew all the laws of Leket. She was already an expert in the laws of Leket. So Boaz is assuming that she knows the story of Yitzchak and Rivka. She knows the story of Yaakov and Rachel. She knows the story of Moshe and Tzipora. So he's intimating to her that who knows where this can go? Who knows what can develop over here? Make sure, don't go to the inferior wells. Stay here, go to the well. You'll be able to drink water and you'll be able to have that which you seek and that which you need. So in this way, what we have here now is that Boaz is providing for Rus, he's protecting Rus, but he's not robbing her of her dignity. And here's something very interesting comes in. Boaz saw that Naomi did not reach out to him. He knew he didn't reach out to her. He knew why he didn't reach out to her, but he noticed Naomi didn't reach out to him. Naomi didn't say, hey Boaz, you know I have this daughter-in-law, she's unattached and available, or hey Boaz, remember we're like relatives? And like, I'm kind of destitute now. I know you're angry at me. You sent me those letters and you were furious. I didn't come back and I didn't listen. Okay, I know, but here I am. I mean, that's what any of us would do. Right? So, but she didn't. She didn't. So Boaz understood that Naomi doesn't want to be a schnorrer. And he also saw Naomi didn't come collect. Rus went to collect. Why? Because for Naomi, the shame was too great for her to bear. She was this wealthy landowner. People know her. Rus is a stranger. Nobody knows who she is. So Boaz doesn't, he saw that they don't want to feel like a schnorrer, they don't want to feel as if they're taking for free. So Boaz doesn't want to take that away. He says, so continue collecting. Collecting and taking from Hashem. What the Torah says goes to a poor person. The poor person doesn't feel bad doing. And the contrary, Boaz said, it's a blessing. You're helping me by allowing me to give tzedakah. But the tzedakah belongs actually to the poor. There's a beautiful chakira, a beautiful analysis of jurisprudence by Reb Chaim Brisker, where he creates this reality called Shevet Aniyim. He says, when you take leket or peah, you're a thief. He says, but who'd you steal from? He didn't steal. You have to steal from somebody. It's ownerless. He says, no, it's not ownerless. He says, it belongs to the proverbial poor people. There's an entity. Who's the owner of that entity and who's the owner of that company? Unfortunately, there's too many people that belong to it. There's many shareholders there. But it's called Shevet Aniyim. That's the terminology, the phraseology he coins. The Shevet Aniyim, he says. The Shevet Aniyim. So Shevet Aniyim, when the poor person who's a member, unfortunately, of that tribe, a member of that special club, when they come and take from the leket or shikha or peah, are they taking from the owner? No. Who are they taking from? From Hashem. It says, Mishulchani, Hashem says. They eat from my table. The poor eat at my table. If the owner is to take the leket or the shikha or the peah, if he's to take these food that's supposed to be left for the poor, guess what the owner is? A thief, that's right. Because he's taking what doesn't belong to him. Because it belongs to them. So Rus and Naomi don't want to take favors. They don't want handouts. This is not a handout. This is taking from Hashem. That's rightfully theirs because they are right now in this situation. So Boaz doesn't want to take that away from them. He doesn't want to rob them of their dignity. Eventually things are going to change. But for now, he says, I understand where this is going. But at any rate, he says, stay in this field. Take from this field. Nobody's going to bother you. You're going to be protected. You'll be thirsty. You're taking the finest of water. He's giving Rus everything that she could possibly need to continue in her current circumstances under the best possible set of conditions. And there's a Rav Acher who says something interesting. He says, don't think that I said stay in this field because I don't want you to go in other fields. Because Boaz had other fields too. And don't go in other fields is not only stay in this field, don't go to my other fields. He says, I'm not trying to limit you. Say, oh, yeah, just enough, bad enough you're here. Just stay in this field. Don't go to my other fields. Chas v'shalom, he says. It's out of generosity, not out of stinginess. When I said to you, stay in this field, I meant for you to be comfortable. And that's why he added, so you'll get thirsty, you'll drink from the finest of water. And I'm saying, don't go to my other fields because I don't want you elsewhere. I'm saying stay here because here it's comfortable. Here I've already spoke to the farmhands. Here you're a known commodity. Here you're under my protection. And here you have fine water. Here you have everything you could possibly need. Continue to do as you must. And we will see how the story unfolds. That, my friends, is the first meeting, the initial encounter between Boaz and Ruth, which is going to set in motion the destiny of the Jewish people and really the entire world.